I will request. Good morning, honorable members and colleagues.
Recording in progress.
Good morning, honorable members and colleagues. It's 10 o'clock.
Good morning, Chair.
We are about to start with the meeting. My name is Pekam Tileni. I'm the committee secretary. I will be the chairperson of this meeting for the next 5 minutes or so. The reason being that I will conduct the process of electing, you know, the acting chairperson. Our chairperson, Honorable Muimang, is on sick leave. So given that he's on sick leave, the rules of the National Council of Provinces empowers the committee to elect the acting chairpersons from among themselves. So what is going to happen now, we are going to elect the acting chairperson according to rule, NCOP rule 92, subsection 1, which reads as follows. If the chairperson of the committee or subcommittee is absent or unable to perform the function of a chairperson, the committee or the subcommittee may elect another of its members as acting chairperson unless these rules provide otherwise in specific case. So these rules doesn't provide otherwise, we are going to elect the acting chairperson. And based on the numbers, the quorum, I have checked how many members who have logged in. If I can go through my list, I've seen Honorable Dango representing Gauteng, Honorable Mama Rekhane representing Limpopo, Honorable Mushote representing Free State, and Honorable Khai representing Eastern Cape, and Honorable Bartlett representing Northern Cape. If there's any member that I've missed, before we proceed, I would like to check. But it seems as members who are here.
Honorable Lond.
Excuse me?
Honorable Lond.
Oh, Honorable Lond. Sorry. Honorable Lond. So in terms of the numbers, there are six province represented, which then give us, you know, the powers according to NCOP rule number 96, subsection 2, which says a question is decided by supporting vote of at least 5 provinces. If it's a constitutional amendment, at least 6. So this is not a constitutional amendment. So 5 provinces. Then now, the procedure that we are going to follow, I'm gonna call for the nomination. And after Thank calling you. For the
Jefferson, I've raised my hand.
Honorable Dango?
I've raised my hand.
Yes, I've noted you, Honorable Dango.
Thank you. I nominate Honorable Khai as chairperson.
Honorable Khai has been nominated. Is there any further nomination?
Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Mushodi, I seconded the nomination of Honorable Khai to be the acting of the committee today.
Thank you, Honorable Mushodi, but I wanted to check if there is any further nomination.
None, Chair.
Well, it seems if there's no further nomination, therefore, Honorable Khai is duly elected as the acting chairperson of this meeting. I thank you. Honorable Khai, you can take the...
Oh, thank you very much, Committee Secretary. Good morning, honorable members, honorable Deputy Minister, DG, of the Department of Public Service and Administration, and other senior managers of the department, and the staff of the committee, the media, and also staff of parliament in general. Can we then get the apologies, committee secretary?
Thank you, Chairperson. We have received three written apologies. The first one, well, is the one for the chairperson who's on sick leave. The second one is for Honorable Boshoff, who's attending, you know, he's got an appointment with the doctor. And the third one is for the minister, Honorable Dodo. She's attending the cabinet meeting. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you so much. Today, then, we're getting honorable members a briefing on the government employee housing scheme. At this stage, I will hand over to the deputy minister to give us an overview. Thank you very much. Over to you, deputy minister, Dr. Pilan Matshake.
Thank you very much, good morning, members of the select committee, members of the media, and members of the public. Indeed, today, the Department of Public Service and Administration will be presenting to you the government employee housing scheme.
The housing. Honorable DM. Can we ask if you can put on your video on the platform here? There's a parliamentary YouTube person who's recording for the public to view the proceedings of the committee on YouTube. I'm not sure whether also on other media channels whether this is, but I see there's someone. From YouTube. Thank you so much.
Person. I've actually tried to put the video on earlier and really found it not to be very visible. And this is why, therefore, I was actually just deciding not to put it on, but just to speak with it switched off. Okay. Also, in terms of the fact that sometimes when where I am, the reception is very poor. And sometimes it actually works out easier if you have your video off. Okay. I don't know whether I should actually keep the video on an ongoing basis, or maybe because already I've managed to make my salutations to switch it off so that I can improve on the reception in the area I am and now a chairperson.
Okay. No, it's okay, DM.
We can switch it off.
For the benefit of members. Because you're coming to the committee for the first time.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay.
We appreciate that too. So if you feel that you have a challenge and you can switch it off, yeah.
Then I can just switch it off.
Continue, yes.
Okay. Thank you, Chairperson. Like I said, today we will actually present on the government employee housing scheme. Which is actually a scheme that has got to do with housing allowance dispensation, which is regulated in terms of a determination and directive on housing allowance for employees in public service, issued by the Minister for Public Service and Administration, and in terms of the Public Service Bargaining Chamber Council, Resolution Number 7 of 2015. And subsequently, the resolution dealing with housing benefits matters. In 2016, the DPSA and Public Investment Corporation, on behalf of Government Employee Pension Fund, signed a partnership agreement to support the objective. And this objective actually led to a number of events that took place subsequent to this agreement, wherein a vehicle to actually roll out the government employee housing scheme was actually put together in the form of South African SA Home Loan. There has been a service level agreement that has been signed between the Department of Public Service and Administration and SA Home Loan. There has been an agreement that has actually been signed between PIC and the SA Home Loan, which actually is an agreement that pulls together the kind of processes and activities that PIC, in collaboration with South African Home Loan, would offer in a form of packages for public servants towards access to housing while working for government. Chairperson, this is just in a nutshell the introduction of this scheme. The scheme that actually allows, just in general, public servants to be in the position to manage to access with ease housing, which is one of the basic socioeconomic rights that we have enshrined within our constitution. And as government, we are actually continuing to realize the need for us to actively participate in helping our own public servants manage to access this right. I'm going to ask the DG of the department, Mayor Yolisa Makhazi, to make a presentation on the government employee housing scheme of South Africa and to actually also just indicate the milestones and progress, indicating the time frames and where we are now in terms of moving forward with the government employee housing scheme. I thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honorable TM. DT, over to you.
Thank you, Chairperson, and good morning to honorable members, the Deputy Minister, including the colleagues from Parliament and colleagues from DPSA. Chairperson, I would like to just take you through a brief introduction and whilst the DDG, acting DDG, Mr. Modise Litsatsi is getting ready to take you through the detail of the presentation. Just a reminder that the housing scheme was established in terms of the PSCPC Resolution 7 of 2015, and that at the time, parties had noted that there was a significant number of employees who were receiving housing allowance but did not own homes, and a number of them found it extremely difficult to access home loans and decent affordable accommodation without additional assistance. Resolution 7 therefore sought to address, amongst others, the undersupply of affordable housing units, especially for the gap market, barriers to affordable finance, which means there is limited products and the credit criteria as well is not friendly to most of our employees. Then the PSCPC Consultative Committee was established consisting of labor reps and employer representatives from National Treasury, Department of Human Settlements, the DPSA, GPF, PIC, and GPA. GHES is located within the Chief Directorate Macro Benefits in the department, a branch that's focusing on negotiations, labor relations, and remuneration management in the DPSA. The strategy that we will share with you, the pillars of today, was approved by MPSA in October 2020. I'm going to, with your permission, Chairperson, request that I hand over to Mr. Litsatsi, who will take you through the detail of the presentation. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you so much, DG. Acting DDG, can you also put on your video, Acting DDG? I think the DG will have to put her video on when she makes the summary. I think that she will come back to summarize after the acting DDG has made the presentation. Before then, we give to the DM to make a closing remarks.
Good morning. Thanks, Chairperson.
Yeah, underground.
where I am here, the lights are not very happy.
Maybe then you can switch it off.
Yes. I will also request, Chair, for the sharing rights to be extended.
Enrico, can you do so, please? Or Supega?
Chairperson, the right is already granted.
Oh, okay. You can go ahead, Mr. Litsatsi.
Yes, just thanks, thanks, Chair. I will try and share the screen.
Okay.
Is the presentation visible, Chair?
Yes, it is visible.
No, thanks, Chair. Thanks.
They are already on conclusion.
No, thanks, Chair. I think the DG and the DM have basically covered the background and the introduction, including the issues of the allowance that the DM has talked to the allowance that currently is standing at 1,500. This is the housing allowance for public servants to enable them to afford housing. However, those who do not use the allowance for home ownership currently, part of it is directed to the individual linked savings facility. And they then only access this amount, whatever that they have saved in the facility, for purposes of acquiring or building a house, either through bond finance, that access loan facility for them to be able to. So it's only strictly on the basis of you using it for housing that you will be able to withdraw from the scheme. This is the profile of a potential beneficiary of the Government Employees Housing Scheme. It was discovered that many public servants had impaired credit records. We are over indebted, and therefore we've got poor credit worthiness and resulting in low credit score. And most of the time, average public servant doesn't have a deposit for a home loan. And some of us have got the garnishee orders against our salaries, as it were. And the income, therefore, may not be sufficient. The income may be sufficient in some cases, but still you cannot afford the bond repayments because of the other incidental expenses related to acquiring housing finance. In October 2020, the Minister of Public Service and Administration approved a government employees housing strategy, which consists of five pillars. Pillar one is around administration, enrollment of the management of a database, the GHS database, where employees are encouraged to enroll in the scheme so that they can be able to enjoy the benefits of the scheme, and employee empowerment in terms of education and assisting where possible for debt rehabilitation, education in terms of how to go about acquiring bond finance and so on. So it's all about financial management, as it were, and empowering employees on how to go about interacting with the market, as it were. Then the third pillar is around managing the stakeholders. The key stakeholder here is labor, the PSCBC, as this is the resolution. The DHS is a product of the PSCBC. And then, of course, the private partnerships that are there, and including the broader public. And the fourth pillar then centers around housing finance, assisting public servants to access housing finance. The fifth pillar is about facilitating the availability of housing stock. So that stock could be available for public servants, and the stock that is availed should be able to cater for the lowest earner up to the highest earner, as it were. Now, this is the status in terms of when the scheme began. In 2015, the housing allowance was 900 rand. As at the 31st of October 2020, the housing scheme, the allowance is 1,451 rand. It is being adjusted on an annual basis by CPI, as provided for in the founding resolution 7 of 2015. And currently that amount is 1,500 that public servants are enjoying as a housing allowance. In 2015, there were about 305,193 public servants who were eligible for the housing allowance but were not receiving it. As at October, that number has reduced to 218,323. That is October 2021. Currently, where we are sitting is around 212,760, meaning that more and more public servants are now actually accessing the housing allowance. This is part of, as a result of the awareness campaigns that the GHS runs in the public service. Employees who are still receiving the old housing allowance, which is a 900 rand, would be 44,530. This would be employees who, at the inception, they were not using the allowance for home ownership. And therefore, part of the allowance is then redirected to the savings facility for them to be able to save towards home ownership. This number has now decreased to 9,359. So from 2015 to October 2020, and it's reducing further. We only have now 7,028 employees who are still receiving that old allowance, meaning that there is progress from 44,000 to 7,000 odd employees there. Employees receiving housing allowance as homeowner. In 2015, we had around 352,000 of those employees. This number has increased to 732,516 employees to date who are, so this number is basically more than, it has more than doubled, meaning there is progress. More and more public servants are now accessing using the allowance for home ownership, as it were. Then in 2015, you had 569,000 employees using the allowance as tenants. That number has reduced to 231,587, also meaning that more and more public servants are moving from the status of being tenants to homeowners, as it were, today. So, in terms of the enrollment into the scheme, in 2015, the scheme did not exist. By now, we've got 402,883 employees enrolled in the scheme, and the numbers are increasing annually. This is just to show the profile of the employees who have enrolled with the scheme. These are employees who earn between 7,000 and 35,000 rand a month. And for instance, the pie chart shows that 40% of these employees have a house that has got with the title deed. 14% of them have got a house, live in a house without a, without the title deed per se, and then we've got another 20% of the employees who are on a communal land as a property without a title deed. So that's the prototype of the profile of the enrolled officials there. This pie chart just shows which banks are actually offering public servants houses. The committee will see that we've got APSA enjoys 21% of the public service market, Standard Bank 29% of the public service market, FNB comes in at 18%, and the SA Home Loans, which is the current partner to GHS, only accounts for 12% of all the loans that have been given to public servants by the banks, and a net bank coming in at 14%. So this is the spread of the service providers to the public servants, as it were, currently. In terms of the analysis, we have picked up that the majority of home loans originate from Gauteng and KZN, probably because those are big provinces, and they also account for the big metros, as it were, and they've got a very big urban areas, because most of these loans would be in the urban areas. And we have also discovered that the loans are fairly split between males and females, with females accounting for a higher percentage than males. And this will inform the strategy going forward. In terms of the age bands of loans taken up by government employees, this ranges between 30 and 50 years. The savings facility has institutionalized the culture of saving within the public service. Some who started saving in 2015, when they withdraw amounts up to 80,000, 70,000 and thereabouts, which gives them a good startup for a deposit, as it were. And that there is a steady decline of rentals by salary level 5 employees, and there is a steady increase in home ownership, meaning employees at this level are now on an increasing basis, actually starting to access home ownership, as it were. Now, from January to July in 2021, approximately 400 employees per month take up home loans of around the value of 700,000. And included in this cohort are employees with lower to impaired credit scores. So, the current partnership with SA Home Loans does cater for this market to assist them to own houses, even though they would not have qualified at the current commercial rate and criteria. In terms of the next steps or milestones, the savings facility has about 13 billion in its coffers. This is money that belongs to the individuals. So it's not a pooled fund that, for instance, can be used for any other purpose, but it's for that individual. It waits for that individual when they are ready to come and withdraw it. And approximately 180 million is being saved monthly. The withdrawal rate fluctuates. In some cases, it will be around 107 million, as happened in September. Then August, there was around 66 million. These are public servants who withdraw their savings from the facility because they are either buying houses or they have secured land to build and so forth. And in October, the latest figures are 288 of these funds have been withdrawn by public servants to buy homes. And we have been advised informally by experts that this facility could actually be repurposed to resolve the financial challenge of cheaper home loans for public servants and the introduction of other beneficial products. Essentially, they are saying that rather than relying on private financial institutions for home loans, the scheme can utilize this instrument to realize the entire objectives of the scheme. So that's an informal advice that we are getting. And to that extent, then a study on the utilization of the funds in the facility will be commissioned during the course of the year to investigate the possible deployment of the funds for product development. In other words, we want to test if what the experts are saying to us is realizable, which of course, if it is realizable and doable, then it will be a big an important development for the scheme in itself. The scheme currently has a partnership with SA Home Loans, but there has been misgivings about that partnerships, especially from our partners at the Bargaining Council, Labour, in terms of that partnership. And there's a process that the DPSA has started to terminate the relationship between SA Home Loans and the scheme, as it were. And it is anticipated that the enrollment system will then be migrated from the South African Home Loans to the DPSA. And this process already is at an advanced stage to migrate the enrollment system, because that belongs to the DPSA, but it's currently run on behalf of the DPSA by the SA Home Loans. There is collaboration with GPF regarding pension-backed home loans. This is a proposal has been tabled at the Bargaining Council to amend the Government Employees Pension Fund Law to enable the pension fund to introduce a pension-backed housing as a benefit to public servants. Labour is considering that proposal, and we're hoping that in due course, if they agree, then the PSCBC will be able to give the GPF a go-ahead to amend the pension fund law accordingly, so that pension-backed housing can be introduced by GPF for the members of the fund. And there is an MOU with the Department of Housing Human Settlements, Finance League Individual Subsidy, FLISP, that is yet to be finalized. There, we are on course to finalizing that. There will be a survey, a housing supply and housing stock survey with the Department of Human Settlements, because the department supply affordable housing in the country, and the survey will then assist to explore avenues of supplying affordable housing in appropriate locations, so that especially closer to employment opportunities, because this still remains a major challenge for public servants. So there is therefore a need to explore modalities on how to facilitate access to affordable housing in appropriate locations. A housing stock survey will be conducted during the financial year, where a public servant, for instance, will be asked typically what kind of house would they be happy with, so that when a design of a house is made, it is made informed by the feedback from the potential beneficiaries themselves. Now, on feasibility, on inclusive, participatory, and competitive housing finance solution, there are preliminary discussions with a number of financing institutions have ensued, especially with the Banking Association of South Africa, the PIC, and the National Credit Regulator. The GHS has outlined the benefits that should accrue to public servants from prospective housing finance solution providers. These are part of our Charter of Housing Finance Solution requirements, and they can be summarized as follows. Any institution that wants to partner with the GHS going forward should be able to provide home loans to public servants at prime minus interest rates. The current prime rate that before the increase was 9, so we would expect that institution should give us something like 8, which is prime minus 1%, or even prime minus 2, to make the interest rates more attractive for public servants to own houses, and also to lessen the burden on the repayments. And in the conclusion of Resolution 1 of 2018, the parties at the PSCBC agreed that employees at salary levels 1 to 5 will be prioritized for additional preferential benefits in terms of housing. So that service provider should be able to tap into that market, and the service provider, in terms of the loans that will be providing, should be prepared to give loans at 100% without wanting us to public servants to put down the deposits where applicable. But of course, an official who can afford the deposit will be able to do so. But for those who can't, we will be saying to the service provider, provide 100% home loans. So that service provider should be prepared to do that. The housing finance solution should also offer choice of mortgaged and non-mortgaged home loans. These are some of the demands that have been made by our counterparts, Labour, in the Bargaining Council, that public servants should not be forced into these long-term loans of 20 years, 30 years, and so forth. They should be able to have, there must be flexibility around the terms. And the solution that the potential service providers would be providing should strive to recognize various forms of tenure, including permission to occupy in rural areas. Meaning that if I come with a permission to occupy document from my authority there in the village, they should be able to assist me with finance, without asking a lot of things from the person who's got the certificate to occupy. And opening up the scheme for the involvement of other housing finance providers, the challenge is requesting special offerings without incentives in the bottom line. So we would want to open up the scheme, that others should be able to participate. But then these conditions that are there tend to be not acceptable to some, because they are looking at their own bottom lines to say it is more beneficial for the service provider to charge you prime plus or prime than to give you prime minus, because they are looking at their own profits and so forth. But these are the things that any service provider that is willing to participate should be able to meet, and therefore realizing the objectives of the scheme. So in conclusion, just to wrap up, the GHS is designed to be an important catalyst to reverse homelessness amongst public servants. The scheme seeks to facilitate access to affordable home ownership for public servants to continuously negotiate favorable terms with both financial and housing suppliers and foster partnerships with key players in the affordable housing and finance space. Chairperson, thanks. That's the status and the progress report on the GHS from 2015 to date. Thank you.
Thank you so much. I don't know if the DG want to make some remarks before we allow the members to ask questions for clarity. Is the DG still lobbying?
Chairperson?
Yes. Oh, DG? Any further comments?
No comments from my side, Chairperson. Thank you.
Oh, okay. Honorable members, there's a presentation on the briefing of government employees' housing scheme. At this stage, we'll allow members to ask questions for clarity, and then we get responses, and the DM will then make closing remarks, and then we'll release the DM and the team, and we deal with other internal matters. Are there any questions, honorable members, on the briefing, or is it very clear?
Chairperson?
Honorable team. Can you take off the, sorry, honorable team. Mr. Letsatsi, can you take off the presentation, please, from the screen? Thank you so much. You can continue, honorable team.
Chair, the question is just very brief, and I apologize for a bit of noise in the background. I've got some building going on here. My wife is making me do work around the house. Chair, yeah, just one, if I can just go to the presentation. And if I look at page 11 of the presentation, it speaks to the 13 billion rand that was saved in the ILSF. That is now being sort of looked at as a possible source of funding. Point number one on that slide just says, experts have informally advised that this facility alone can resolve the financial challenge of cheaper home loans for public servants and the introduction of other beneficial projects. My question just to the department is why have experts informally advised? Why can we not get various financing experts to give us an official opinion that we can consider in terms of that particular fund? Because it possibly is a way in which that particular asset can be sweated to the benefit of employees, but in a market-driven and incentive, not just a petty cash tin, as it were. I think that we would be in a much better position if we had a official presentation from, let's say, a number of private sector experts who can advise on how that can be done. So that's my only query there, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Are there any other questions, honorable members? It looks like the presentation was very clear. But from my side, can I just ask the DM and the DG, who qualifies for the housing scheme? Are all employees of government qualify? Because when you look at the number, so what I want to check first is that whoever owns a house, whether the house is paid up, is entitled to the 1.5 housing subsidy if one is a homeowner, irrespective of whether they is still or she's still paying the house? That's a first question. The second one also linked to it, whether all the employees are supposed to be enrolled, or is it only those who want to have houses that enroll? And therefore those who are not enrolled are not entitled to the 1.5 rents. That's a second question. The other question is linked to this ILSF. I think the acting DDG has responded to the question I was having as to whether this money is kind of like a pool. Anyone can access it. That aspect has been addressed. But what I would like to find out, one, is what happens after a person, after some time, an employee access the fund from the ILSF, does the person continue then to receive the 1.5 after accessing the whatever amount that is there? But also linked to this, whether are there statements that employees were in the ILSF get from time to time as to how much they have in the kitty? What happened then if an employee resigns while he or she has not yet accessed the money that is in the fund or in the facility, if he or she resigns or dies or even retire, what happened to that situation? And also what happens in a situation where there's a couple that works in government, can they access, both of them, this allowance, but also can they have this ILSF, both of them as a couple, or the spouse, if I may put it that way. The 13 billion that Honorable Tim is referring to, who's administering it, or which financial institution is administering the 13 billion? I just want to check also with regard to the, you said the employee is eligible but not receiving a housing allowance. I don't know if that group is the group that is on the ILSF. But I don't understand when you say they are eligible, but they're not receiving the housing allowance. And why they're not receiving it? Is it because it's diverted to the ILSF, or is a group that has not enrolled with the scheme? The last question, you refer to the issue of the misgivings that other partners are not happy with the South African home loans. What are the challenges with the South African home loans? So those are the few questions that I'm having. DG, thank you very much. Back to you, DG, and then the DM will then make concluding remarks.
Thank you, Chairperson. I will ask the team to attend to the questions, and then I'll come back later before the Chairperson, before the Deputy Minister, if I have anything to add. Okay. The questions are quite technical, therefore the team should be able to handle them.
Okay.
Thank you, Chair.
Then you'll indicate, DG, who should be responding among the team members.
Thank you, Chair. Modisa is here, he will take over the questions.
Okay. Mr. Litsatsi?
Sorry, Mr. Litsatsi.
No, it's fine, DG. No, thanks. Thanks, DG. I think let's start with the last one on the SA home loans and the misgivings. There's a feeling that when SA Home Loans was brought on board, there was no a broad consultation with labor. That's the misgiving that is there, and therefore they would not want to be associated with a partner that they themselves do not recognize, as it were. Hence, the process is then to terminate those that relationship, because if that relationship is not terminated, it will just perpetuate a state of inertia where we cannot get maximum benefit out of SA Home Loans, because we don't have the partner, that our partners would not want to be part of a process. For instance, if you want to drive advocacy programs and so forth, you won't be able to do that because of the of those misgivings. So that process is underway. In terms of eligibility, it's not only those who are enrolled in the database that are eligible. All public servants are, including SMS members, they can enroll in the system. But on the main, you will find that in the system, there's predominantly levels 1 to 12. Now, accessing the allowance is not automatic. There is an application process that the employee must trigger. And you find that there are those who are not interested to participate because they live with parents, or they live, on the main is those that would be living in with parents, or some of them would have, they live in the rural areas, they're not paying bonds and so forth, and they do not then come forward to apply for participation in the scheme, even though all the system is such that everybody who's eligible should be able to get. If you don't own a home, like for instance a bonded house and so on, it's not in your name. If you've got the permission to occupy, you are able to access the benefits of the scheme as it were, including the allowance. And the other question was about the couples. So in 2018, before resolution 1 of 2018 was concluded, for a public servant, a married couple of public servants only qualified for one of them qualified for the allowance, not both. But since then it has been delinked. So each spouse qualifies for the allowance. And therefore, if both of them do not own a home, they would be part of their of the allowance would be directed to the savings or all of it, depending on where they came in after, whether before or after resolution 7 of 2015. So both of them will qualify for that. On the 13 billion, the account is held, the money is held in an account managed by National Treasury. So it's managed internally within government. And the reason why we're saying experts have informally advised is that through the interactions, as we indicated that we had discussions with the major banks, including the South African Banking Association, they made those observations in those interactions. Hence, those observations then triggered the need to commission a research on the possible deployment of the funds to come to the question of that, so that we can then get a scientific advice as per the question as to why don't we have a firm advice from experts. So there's a process underway to get the experts to advise us on what are the possible means that can be utilized to deploy the funds. without transgressing the Resolution 7 of 2015, which makes the monies individual funds, not pool funds. So that process is underway, and we hope it to be completed sometime next year. On the resignation, and well, I will include dismissals there. So the resolution provides that if you are dismissed or resign from the public service, you forfeit the savings. But if you leave the public service through retirement, for instance, you'll be able to have access to the service. So there's monies that accumulate from the resignation within the fund in itself, as it were. I hope, Chair, that I've touched all the questions. If not, I would request my colleagues from GHS, Ma'am Konto Kelly, and Dumisani Datengwamba, to add where I may have left some gaps through you, Chairperson, of course.
Sorry, I'm muted. Thank you very much for the response. If there are any other additions, just before that, there's something that I forgot to ask with regard to the amount. At some stage, it was 900, I think in 2015, and then 1.5 in 2020. And as from 31st of October 2021, it's 1,507. So how often does it increase? If you can clarify that area as well.
No, thanks, Chair. The resolution provides that it must increase by adjusted by CPI on an annual basis.
Okay. Even if employees do not get an increase in that particular year, it will still increase.
Oh, yes, okay. It's a separate resolution for that. Yes,
a separate resolution. Oh, okay. Yes. No, I understand that. Okay. I don't know if there are any further clarities from your side.
I am not sure if my colleagues who are here, Dumisani and Shirley, want to add any further clarities. Dumisani is the chief director responsible for macro benefits, and GHS housing scheme is part of the macro benefits. And Shirley is the director responsible for GHS, the housing scheme. From my side, I just wanted to highlight one thing which may be obvious, but I think it's always too important to highlight the definition of a public servant in terms of our context. We are talking to employees who are employed by national and provincial government. In terms of the Public Service Act. So it will be those who qualify to be part of the scheme. It does not extend to local government. It does not extend to some who are not employed in terms of the Public Service Act. And you would know that there's many other legislations in the public service, like SAPS would have those who are employed in terms of the Public Service Act, and they would have those who are employed in terms of the Police Act. The second issue I wanted to raise is that currently, and I think DM has spoken to this in detail, but just to say that we are currently with a new leadership in the department that started in August, the deputy minister and the minister, who are not really new, but new in terms of the reshuffle that took place, or the changes that took place. We are currently involved in a process of looking at how we go forward in terms of implementation, in terms of just checking up in terms of implementation, in terms of the housing scheme, and ensure that the gap market is really attended to, because the gap market is our concern. We think that currently with the home loans arrangement, the credit with home loans is still expensive, and it's not really, SA Home Loans is not really talking to our gap market that we need to talk to. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you so much, Dich. I saw the hand of Dumisani. Thank you. Though he has dropped it.
Yes, good morning, Chair, and mornings to the Deputy Minister, DG, and members of the committee. There is a question that was asked regarding access to the ILSF by employees. I think the response in brief is that Yes, employees do have access to the ILSF funds. They can see from time to time how much is in the savings facility. I just wanted to clarify that, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Thank you very much. I'm just worried about this, the group that is eligible but not receiving. The response was that there will be those who still stay perhaps with their parents. I was of the view that whoever is not having a house right now or renting, his or her allowance automatically goes to the ILSF, so that whenever that person decides, even those who are staying in the rural areas, whenever they decide to buy a house, they can then access the facility. Otherwise, automatically the money goes to that facility. But I hear that those who stay with the parents or who stay in the rural areas cannot access, cannot be part of the scheme. I don't know if I heard it correctly. It's just that aspect, because a person might be staying with the parents, but at some stage they may move out and want to have a house. But then if he has to start from zero in terms of the ILSF, then I find it is a concern. I don't know if I'm interpreting it correctly. I don't know if Mr. Litsatsi or Dumisano would like to come or even teaching on that aspect.
No, thanks, Chair. In fact, it's not like they do not qualify. They just opt not to access the allowance, because there is a system in place that the allowance is not automatic. As an official, I must then complete a form and indicate my status of home ownership. Either I'm going to be saying I'm renting, meaning I'm a tenant, and I could be a tenant in my mother's house, as it were. So I must bring proof that I'm a tenant. And once my ownership status has been established, either the whole of the 1,500 is going to be. So if I'm going to trigger it now, the likelihood is that the whole of the 1,500 would be directed to the savings facility for those employees. So there are roadshows currently. There was roadshows with one of the departments, SAPS, and where employees are being encouraged to actually apply to access the allowance. And the response that we are getting is quite overwhelming, that the unit will be busy for the better part of this coming month to enroll those members in the system. As the advocacy programs gain traction, some of those who would not have applied for the housing allowance are starting to come on board. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much, Chair. Yeah, but that is quite a big number, 212,760. I think I agree with you. Advocacy is really required there. But I had assumed that by virtue of being a public service employee, you automatically get the allowance, but because you're not renting, you're not a homeowner, it automatically goes to the facility. So I had that understanding, but then you have clarified that it is not automatic. Yeah, thank you very much. I don't know if there are any further questions from members for clarity. No, any clarity seeking questions? If not, can I then go back to the TM for closing remarks?
Thank you, Chairperson. Just to thank you for the opportunity for the department to actually present before you. Like I said right at the beginning, this is a very important scheme. We are conscious of the fact that it's one of the most expensive schemes that government has got. We continue to evaluate as to how best we can actually run the scheme. We are in the process of developing what we call a status report. And that status report will actually manage to help us to understand where we come from in terms of scheme and what actually happened along the way and where we think the scheme should actually be getting to. One thing so important that has been mentioned is that the fact that we are at a stage where we're looking at whether to continue with SA Home Loan or not, because of the fact that the initial idea with SA Home Loan was for SA Home Loan to provide a package that would actually be better than other
recording in progress.
Financial institution is just a home loan that has actually been given an agreement. It has an agreement with government that has got money that was actually put into it. We thought that through this process, we might be in the position to disrupt the market, manage to make it possible for public servants to access housing at better interest rates, but we find the situation still the same. There is a problem in terms of separation that we're dealing with now. Government wants to have a one-year notice separation agreement with SA Home Loan. SA Home Loan is demanding 5-year separation agreement. It's a process that we're dealing with now, which we are actually hoping that we will manage to come out of it with us managing to get the one-year notice period, because if there's no performance, there isn't really any good reason why a service should actually continue to exist. And indeed, you've been asking about access of the product in terms of public servants. We take it every public servant, regardless of their category, should be in the position to access this service. It's a principle of fairness needs to be applied. Of course, we've got different types of public servants, including those that come with the executive when they say he takes up office, that we need to actually continue to look at and look at what kind of provisions and mechanisms we can actually manage to apply to help them also to manage to access these services whilst working for public service. Chairperson, this in a nutshell, I'm hoping gives the select committee a picture of the government employee housing scheme. We are happy that you have developed interest in it, and we wish to continue to work closely with you as we continue to reevaluate this scheme towards betterment of a service that should actually help to improve on the lives of public servants, especially when it comes to housing. I thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you so much, DM. Really thank you for coming to the select committee to brief members on the scheme. And also we really appreciate that there's this kind of a scheme because public service employees have long been crying that they are unable to access the RDP houses because of the threshold in terms of the salary that they earn, but also they are unable to get a bond also because of the salary that they earn. So they were in the middle. So we really appreciate that there's this now this scheme that is able to address those challenges. So on behalf of the chairperson of the select committee, Honorable Kenny Moimak, who's unable to be with us because he's on sick leave. I'd really like to thank you, TM, DG, and the officials of the department, and wish you a happy festive season until we meet again in 2022. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. At this stage, we'll release you, TM, and the team. And then we continue with the members with regard to other items which are internal, such as the minutes and the first team program for 2022. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye bye.
Thank you, Chairperson. Bye.
Thank you
so much. Bye. Thank you. Thank you, DG. Thank you, DM. Honorable members, in terms of the next item, we have two items. The minutes of the last meeting, and then after that, the adoption of the 2022 first term program. Yeah, the minutes, can we scroll slowly down to check if members' name are there, they're correctly spelled.
Recording in progress.
Thank you so much. Are there any corrections or omissions? Any comments on the minutes? I take it that.
Chair. Can we please get back to 5.2?
Come again, another team.
Please go back to 5.2, please.
5.2, okay.
Okay. Yeah, no, those are just some of the inputs I made. I just wanted to make sure they were correctly. The minister agreed. Yeah, no, that's fine then, Chair. Thank you.
All right. Okay. Thank you so much. Can we then have a move on the second for the adoption of the minutes?
Thank you, Chair. Honorable Mshodi, move for adoption of the minutes. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Honorable Mshodi. Any second?
I'll second, Chair.
Sorry?
I can second, Chair.
Oh, thank you so much, Honorable Tim. Any contra review? Not. Thank you so much. Can we then flight the first term program for 2022? There is a program starting on the 1st of to the 3rd of February, it's a NCOP members training. And then on the 9th, it's a briefing on cross-border road transport agency on its annual report. Then briefing with PARASA on its annual report. And then the 23 or 23rd will be a briefing on the Construction Industry Development Board on its annual report. And then first, oh, I Let me rather leave it. Maybe you can move up so that members can see. I don't know if I missed out something. Can you go up again, please? Oh, okay. No, that's fine. Fimba Road Accident Fund, South African National Road Agency Limited, Sandra, Transport. Okay. So that will be the first term, then from the 1st to the 15th of April, then it's a constituency period. But from the 29th to the 1st, there will be NCOP provincial. Can we have a move on the second for the adoption of the first term program, honorable members?
May I just ask a question first?
Yes.
Chair, is there any indication as to when we, I'm assuming all of this is virtual, yes. Is there any indication when we might start moving towards a in-person committee environment, or is there nothing like it at the moment?
Nothing at this stage. Maybe something that we can check with from our party whips. So that because these matters are normally discussed at the WIPARI and also in the programming meeting. I'll suggest that maybe we ask our whips who sit in the WIPARI meetings as well as the programming meetings. Because I agree with you, sometimes it's difficult to, you know, there's these challenges of network. From time to time. So I would also support that we go back. Yesterday I was also in Parliament and the meeting, though the committee was virtual, but I was doing it from my office in Parliament. So I would agree with you that I think it's about time that we have this meeting physically, like we do with the plenary session, though they are hybrid, but also taking into account the health protocols. So I don't have an answer, Honorable Tim, but I suggest that it's a matter that I think we must raise with our whips.
I understand, Chair. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
With that, I'm happy to support the schedule.
Okay. Can we have a second at the end for the adoption of the program, first term program? I take it that Honorable Tim, you're moving for its adoption.
Yes, Chair, I am. I also just note that this seems to be the transport PSA and public works and infrastructure schedule. There's no mention of the Tuesday meetings. I don't know if we're going to adopt that at some other point. There's no mention of the Tuesday meetings, your meetings, Chair.
Oh, we adopted it yesterday. Yesterday. It was tabled yesterday. We adopted it. But I think we have to review it because I see that the one of the trade was starting from the 22nd of February. Because we look at the framework that was given to us, that committees will start on the 22nd, but I see this committee will start in early in February. So we need to find out, maybe we could also be adding for that committee other meetings, but because we don't have a meeting, we will then circulate it to members for their comments. So that at least we can cover ground, because I was also worried that we were only starting on the 22nd with the other committee that sits on Tuesday. But I see this one start from the first week of February. So we had to follow up with the committee staff about that. But the point I'm raising, because we won't have a meeting, so we will circulate additional meetings. For comment by members, but if there are no comments, we'll assume that the members agree with the additional meetings that will include in the in the in the program. Thank you.
I propose the current schedule that we're looking at.
Yes. Okay.
Thank you. Okay.
Any second for the adoption of the program, honourable members?
Thank you, Chair. Honourable members, second.
Thank you. Thank you. Honourable Aplin, I take it that you also seconded.
Yes. Yes, Chair.
Thank you so much. Honourable members, I don't know, Shupega, if there's any other item before I thank members.
Thank you, Chairperson. We were supposed, you know, to be dealing with the draft regulations, but we'll deal with it next year.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
All right. No, thank you. On behalf of the chairperson of the committee, I'd like to thank the members for attending the meeting. Also, special thanks to Honorable Bartlett, who's standing in for Honorable Moimang. We, as we said yesterday, we continue to wish Honorable Moimang a speedy recovery. Spoke to him this morning before the meeting. Is getting better. We hope to be with him possible next week, or if not, then next year. On his behalf, I would like to thank you, honorable members, for your attendance and participation. Being the last meeting today, I would also like to thank the staff of the committee for its assistance. Providing assistance to the committee throughout the year, and also wish everyone a happy festive season till we meet next year as a committee. Though we'll be meeting this week in the plenary and as well as in the plenary next week. But on behalf of the committee, I'd like to thank you very much for your attendance and participation in the meeting throughout the year. Thank you so much. The meeting is adjourned.
Sorry, Chairperson.
Thank you. Over to you, Honorable Team.
Sorry, Chair, I don't want to be the last word, but I also would like to thank you for your leadership this year. And and obviously, by extension, Honorable Moimang, but I will send him a message separately.
Yes.
I think we've done some good work. I think we've cooperated well. And I think we've held the executive to account. So to you and to all my colleagues, all the staff, thank you very much and have a blessed Christmas. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Honorable Members. The meeting
recording
is
stopped.
Thank you. Goodbye.